It's time for Mac Geek Gab, and listener Zhang74 brings us our quick tip of the week by saying, I'm new to Sonoma, and I realized I accidentally hit Command-R instead of Command-D when attempting to duplicate a JPEG file so I could rotate it. Wouldn't you know it, it rotated directly within the Finder. Previews Command-L, rotate left, and Command-R, rotate right, work directly within a Finder window. No need to either open the image or even view it in Quick Look. Amazing. More tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1053 for Monday, September 2nd, Calendar Adjustment Day, 2024. Folks, and welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in your tips like that. You send in your cool stuff found. You send in your questions. We share it all. We hopefully answer your questions. Sometimes we share tips and cool stuff found of our own. We loosely tie it together into an agenda that allows us all a great opportunity to learn at least five new things every single time we get together. Sponsors for this episode include coda.io/MGG. That's where you can go to have one doc to rule them all. Bring all your text and tables together. And at that URL, coda.io/MGG, you can sign up for free. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. For now, as far as I know, here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
And here also in New Hampshire, it's Pilot Pete. Hold on. Let me adjust my calendar back a few years. I want to be young again.
Yeah, there's this whole calendar adjustment day thing is it's interesting. Yeah. It commemorates the day in history when New Year's Day was shifted to the 1st of January and the entire calendar system changed.
Interesting.
Yeah, after the British Calendar Act of 1751, the Gregorian calendar was adopted by Britain in 1752. But shifting and aligning with a new calendar was not that simple. Interesting. The residents of Britain and the American colonies went to sleep at night on September 2nd, 1752, and woke up the next day to September 14th, 1752. Huh. Change also led to New Year's Day being celebrated on January 1st. Those 11 days are lost forever to the sands of time.
I was going to say, I've gone to bed on a September 2nd and woke up on the 14th before,
different,
but I don't
think
it was a calendar adjustment.
It's not the calendar adjustment. That's right.
No. Whoops. Right.
Have you guys ever heard about the initiative? There were a couple plans and a couple people have been trying to promote the International Fixed Calendar.
I don't know
about
this.
Was that like 13 months with 28 days?
Yep, you got it, Pete. Yeah. So you do 13 months and every month has exactly the same days. So stuff would never shift, right?
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We could have Friday the 13th every month if we wanted. Right. Not something just in September.
Something Kodak was behind, and I didn't know this till I just brought up the Wikipedia, but apparently he instituted it in 1928 at Eastman Kodak.
That sounds terrible.
What a nightmare.
Just Eastman Kodak did this. And so the people, this is like pre-severance, where when you're at work, you have to live in one calendar and then the rest of your life happens. So how did, okay. So I guess weekends.
I don't know how they dealt.
Like it was still 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Monday was Monday, whether you were
exactly
in
4 weeks every month
in the Matrix or not in the Matrix. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. It was just the
problem becomes
different.
Is there such a thing as a blue moon with a fixed calendar? Can you get two full moons in the same calendar month?
I don't know. I find it fascinating. It's an interesting concept and it seems so logical. You know, I don't know what
that's
means
why we
for
don't
all
do it,
other
yeah.
instances, right? Yeah, yeah, it's like the metric system. God forbid.
Huh.
We'd pick a system of measurement that actually makes sense.
It corresponds to other, you know, volume corresponds to weight, corresponds to distance.
God forbid. It's because American school children, when at least when I was going to school, we just couldn't handle it.
Right? Interesting.
I remember that back in the 70s. You know what? We were going to swap everything over, and they started putting it on the science, and then we went away from it. It's like,
yeah, everybody got scared.
Yeah.
We were too dumb to transition, apparently, in the 70s.
Huh. Yeah.
Interesting.
How about I take us to another quick tip and save us from any more calendar adjustments?
You want to put us back on the rails? All right.
There we go. So Todd writes in about privacy and security, and he says, wait a minute. Do I have the right one?
Yeah,
I do.
I don't know. Yeah. I can't tell
privacy
you.
And security.
Read my mind. Read what I'm thinking. Todd writes in from MacGeekGab 1049, Terry mounting or not external drives. I have an external SSD that I use for Time Machine attached to an OWC dock, which is attached to my MacBook Pro. I have a handwritten card that I lay on my MacBook's keyboard that states eject. This reminds me to eject the drive prior to pulling it from the Thunderbolt cable. Since I've been doing this by selecting the disk and hitting Command E, but then in MacGeekGab 1049, you hit me in the head to tell me what I already knew. There was a better way. After the show, I created a shortcut to eject the disk that put the app in my Mac's dock and went to a one-click solution. But that was working till about a week ago when I started getting this pop-up after I clicked an eject app icon. It said, the pop-up said, privacy, allow eject TM drive to access your file, original Thunderbolt 02, ? Meaning, I can't do this unless you say okay. Since I had clicked on the eject icon because I was ready to leave my MacBook, I grumbled with and clicked the okay button. And today I stopped to think about the issue, and I made a guess that this had to do with system settings, privacy and security, full disk access. I command clicked the shortcut eject app icon in the dock, which opened the folder with the app. I dragged that app icon to the full disk access window and gave permission via my fingerprint, and my problem was solved. Not sure why it took the system a week or so to determine that the shortcut app was a privacy issue, but I am no longer getting caught when I want to leave my MacBook. Cheers, Todd. And I wrote him back. I said, that's a great tip. Thank you. I'm not sure I would have thought to do this. I'd have just kept clicking OK like a caveman for the rest of my life. But taking that app and throwing it in the system settings privacy and giving it full disk access. Brilliant.
Yeah. Brilliant. Interesting. He did drag that into full disk access. Okay. So it hadn't appeared there, because a lot of times when an app asks to do something like that, it will have somehow already populated itself, or app, the Mac OS will have populated it into that list. Interesting. Yeah.
Huh. So that's kind of two quick tips. One, think to do it. And two, you can drag that app in there to populate it.
Yeah.
So
I don't know about like all these people that are living their life just scared. Because like I gave up on this a long time ago. I just ripped the cable out like a
caveman.
You know, like I don't care. You don't have to worry about it.
And you haven't had any data corruption or anything like that?
Just kidding.
You're kidding.
I know people that do that. I know people that do that.
Okay. You sounded serious. I didn't know.
What could possibly go wrong?
Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, though. Like, if you had all solid state drives, would it be an issue?
It potentially, because...
If it's writing at the time, writing is the main concern, right? If something's writing to the disk and you rip out right at that point.
Correct. And with SSDs, you know, they do their garbage collection and the whole trimming or, you know, whatever to free up actual, you know, to make the sectors that should be free actually free so that you can write to them efficiently later. So I would argue that it's possible that it could be worse with an SSD than a rotational drive.
Interesting, yeah.
So what you're saying is, well, it's sitting there quietly, apparently doing nothing, not making any noise.
That's right.
SSD could be
That's correct, Pete. Yeah.
I mean, my favorite, and I know there's a lot of people that have this issue, is when you have some device and like my anchor like hub thing has an issue every once in a while. And I don't know if it's overheating or what it does, where it'll just, you know, kick off for a millisecond and then all my drives go away. So that's always fun.
I've had that too with a variety of different hubs. I've always attributed it to like a power supply, you know, flakiness or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Anyway,
I like it. I like talking about shortcuts. We have a couple more about shortcuts. Byrne shares one about screenshots. He says, an easy way to take a screenshot and get it emailed to yourself if you have an iPhone 15 Pro with the action button is to first create a shortcut that when invoked, it waits 1 second, takes the screenshot, and then emails that screenshot to yourself. And then he assigns that screenshot to the action button, or that shortcut rather, to the action button. And it's an easy way to take a screenshot and have it automatically emailed to yourself, which I love the idea of using the action button with shortcuts, because that opens it up to almost anything that you'd want to do. Yes. So, yeah, I like it.
Which begs the question.
I'll beg. What's the question?
If you have an Apple Watch Ultra with an action button, could you do the same with that action button? I wonder.
You can assign shortcuts to it, but the shortcuts need to be able to run on the watch. I don't think.
Right.
That's a good question, though. Can you use the action button on the watch to trigger a shortcut to run on your iPhone? Like, is there a cascading set of steps?
I guess that's what I'm asking. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
I'm too addicted to using my action button for my nightlight on my watch. So
it is a nice. I have mine set the same way. Yeah. Well, actually, I had to turn it off because it turned on during a theater show once, which is bad. Yeah, that was it. I was super lucky. It was during a moment in the show where everything on stage was mostly dark. This sounds like it's going in the wrong direction, but trust me when I say that the universe smiled on me. And there was one person like singing a song or something. So I was playing, like I couldn't fix this. Yeah. And the rest of the company was behind them with like little white lights that were supposed to look like fireflies in the woods. And they were just sort of randomly moving them around. And so my watch just joined in as a yet another firefly. I remember our music director kind of looking at me, seeing it. And I'm like, yeah, I know. it was like, yeah, it's fine. It's going to be okay. Like, it's going to be fine. And I found a moment to turn it off or whatever. But yeah, it was like, whoo, all right, I got to change that. I don't think I've changed it back since I finished doing that theater show. But
okay. And I'll take this moment to reiterate my fist shake to Apple. Apple, when I'm in the red mode, I want a red night light, not a white one. Just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be, it would be nice if you could have it default to that. yep, that would be good.
Alrighty, more shortcuts?
More shortcuts, please.
Yeah, Curate has one related to something that comes up on the show from time to time. I don't know that we cover this. He had sent us this question about, hey, when I get into my car, CarPlay always starts automatically playing the last thing that I played, and I don't always want that to happen, or I don't like that to happen. And I think I've brought up in the past, the only way I've seen to work around it or possibly work around it is before you exit the car, making sure you deliberately, you know, stop or pause whatever you were playing, and then it shouldn't come back on. Kirit wrote back to say, hey, that doesn't work all the time for me. And he said, so he kept searching for a solution, and he came across a shortcut. There's a YouTube video for it, so we'll include that in the show notes. But in essence, what it is with shortcuts, you can set up something called a personal automation. And personal automations can be triggered by a number of different events. My daughter's favorite one was she would have her iPhone play a sound every time she plugged in the charging cable.
Sure.
So you can detect that. So, you know, and it would say something like, yummy. But anyway, I digress. But another shortcut you can have is when CarPlay connects. So you can simply set up a shortcut that says when CarPlay connects, pause the music app or pause
playback.
Audio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I've set this up on my phone and it works. There is a lag though. The music starts playing and then it stops. And so when I first set it up, I was like, wait a minute, what just happened? Why did my podcast stop playing? Cause you don't set it just for the music app. You just set it for playback in general for the now playing thing. And so I was like, okay, great. I'm into my, oh wait, what happened? Okay. I did that. That was me. I caused that. Yeah. So. So don't get caught. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it does work. Yeah.
Self-inflicted.
There's a lot of things that are self-inflicted here, but.
There's that.
But yeah, no, it works. And the link is in the show notes, which is excellent. Andrew has a tip. Have we talked about this before? Standardizing on one downloads folder. It sure. I feel like we have, but maybe not. You know what? We're just going to do it again. And if it's deja vu for all of us and not just me, well, then it's shared deja vu. And I don't know what that actually is, but Andrew.
Deja vu toi. Sorry.
I don't even know. Thanks so much for listening, folks. This is the final episode ever. Yep. No.
It's what I do, Dave.
I know.
You invited me.
Yeah, it's true. I leave your mic unmuted. It's all my fault. Yep. He said, recently you were discussing the existence of two download folders in Apple land, one in the home folder on macOS and the other in the iCloud folder on iOS, iPadOS, and macOS. It takes less than a minute to have just one downloads folder. macOS has a downloads folder in the user's home folder. It is only on the Mac, correct. When you are an iCloud account holder and you are signed into it on your iPhone, iPad, or Mac, a downloads folder also exists inside your iCloud Drive folder. Confusing? Logical? No. And yes, the logic of having a downloads folder on the Mac is for those who don't use iCloud. They might live in Google land, Microsoft land, or no land whatsoever. You can run a Mac without an iCloud account, and this downloads folder doesn't sync anywhere. However, life is pretty bad for iPhones and iPads without an iCloud account. It can be done, but it's like having a car without gas. Yeah, but there's a lot of electric cars that run just fine without gas. Anyway, I digress. He says, so most people have an iCloud account on their iPhone or iPad, whether they realize it or not. So how do you get one downloads folder to rule them all? It's easy. On your Mac, go into Safari settings. The first tab, General, asks you where you want your downloads to go. Change this from the downloads in the home folder to downloads in the iCloud folder. Then in Apple Mail, do the same thing. In the General tab, change downloads from the home folder to the iCloud folder. And now you're done. All of your downloads will sync across all of your devices. On your Mac, you can add the iCloud folder for downloads to the sidebar by simply dragging it there. And on iOS and iPadOS, you can also change the location of downloads from Safari. To do so, go to Safari settings and choose where you want your downloads to go. Because iPhones also have a local downloads folder and a synced downloads folder. So I love this. It is nice to have, just like you can have one documents folder, one desktop folder to rule them all. You can have one downloads folder to rule them all. One might note that when you enable documents and desktop syncing, your default documents and desktop on your Mac are synced to iCloud. And if you enable that on all of your Macs, then all of them have the same thing synced. You will also note that there is no way in the iCloud settings to say sync my downloads across all my devices. My guess is that this is very intentional on Apple's part, because on your Mac, you might download some 6 gigabyte file or something that's a disk image of like the latest Mac OS, and you might leave that in your downloads folder for a very long time. And you might not want that synced across iCloud, especially when the default, you know, iCloud storage is still, what is it, still 5 gigs or something? It's like, it's ridiculously small.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
So I think that's why this doesn't happen automatically. But Andrew, you are 100% right that this is doable. I just wanted to kind of offer that context so that we all make this decision eyes wide open. That's all. So, yeah. Yepper. But you are correct. That will work. That will work. Love it. Yeah. Am I taking Doug's quick tip here, Adam? Is that on me? I will happily.
Oh, I don't. I can.
Yeah, go ahead. Take it. Because it's related to the thing that we talked about last episode with your home videos.
I think it just didn't get marked. Yeah, yeah. So I had commented, and I think Doug has provided the answer, so we'll get to that in a second. But basically, I had commented that I had a time when I got caught the other day because I had a bunch of home videos of my kids that were very, very important to me. And we were having a dinner and my wife asked me to show our friend this video and I couldn't find it on my Mac or on my phone or anything. It was just like gone. And I realized that this happened when Apple moved everything over to the TV app, because it used to be, you know, in the movies app, I think it was called.
Right.
And you had this home video section, and home videos ended up getting moved into, I think, iTunes Media. And it was just gone. And so I had to scramble and find backups. But Doug says, as for home videos, I think they lived in a subfolder of the iTunes media folder. And he's absolutely correct. And did or do not automatically move to the TV app. Their existence here enabled home sharing to show them in Apple TV under computers, which is a different app. And you can access them from there. So he says, unless you actively deleted your iTunes media folder without looking inside, they still should be there. And they probably are, because what has happened, and I've recently disconnected it because, as I mentioned earlier, I've been having these issues with my hard drives just auto disconnecting. So I had disconnected all my hard drives and my iTunes media folder lives on an external drive. So that's probably where everything went. Now, I still wouldn't have been able to find them on my iPhone, though, because I don't think they sync anywhere. So that was the problem when we were at dinner, was like I was expecting them to be somewhere on my iPhone, but obviously they're not going to be there. They would only be there if I don't even know if there is a computer app on the iPhone or not. Interesting. I don't know how you would access them. Like even if my Mac was connected and I had my media sharing on, you know, computer sharing on, and, you know, like if all those things were true, I don't know if I could still get them from my phone. He's right about the TV app. There's like a computer app, I think it's called, or something like that. Or would they show up in, yeah, I'd have to do a little more research, but he's absolutely right about where those things got moved to when Apple kind of split everything apart. So yep. Appreciate that.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you, Doug. Good stuff. All right. One last quick tip for today, not final. I think we might actually still do a show next week, despite our indiscretions here.
But I think I've been uninvited. I'm not sure I'm going to be here next week. We'll see, folks. Stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. We'll all find out together. Andrew says, I may be late to the party on this, but I just discovered that on a Mac, you can drag and drop Apple Mail items into Notes, To-Dos, Calendar, and probably more. On Notes, if you drag and drop from Mail into a note, it creates a hyperlink to that note, to the Mail message from that note, I would think, if you drag drop from Mail into
Correct.
A note. Yes, right. If you drag and drop from Mail into a reminder, To-Do, it creates an entry and an icon taking you to that Mail item. And similarly, in Calendar, if you drag from Mail into Calendar, it creates an appointment and an icon taking you back, a link taking you back to that specific email. If you are on your iPhone or iPad and click the link or icon, it takes you to the Mail message on that device. So this stuff is all synced across if you have Mail accounts that are synced across. So, yeah, that's one of those interesting things. I never really used this. But I can absolutely see the value in it. So, do you guys use the Mail links for this reason?
No, I don't. But I mean, obviously, this is a great way for those important emails. This would be a great system for like those people who are like can never find that email when they're searching for email.
Yeah.
Like you could build you could set up a note and like for stuff you know you're going to need to come back to, drop them in there and you just have a note that syncs across everything and, you know, kind of separate them from. That's one use case I can think for it. But yeah. And then even like putting them into calendar events or whatever is kind of nice too, because, you know, someone sends you an email and sets up a meeting or a time, and maybe that email has information in it that you want to reference, you know, then you have it right in your calendar event and you can just click over. Like there's a lot of good use cases for this. I've just never used it. I'm just not that organized. You know, I'm not David Sparks.
Right.
Yeah, I'd love to hear from someone who does use this, because I as I said, I don't, but I agree with you, Adam, that there is there are some potential efficiencies here that if I hear some use cases, I'll like be like, oh yeah, I have to start doing that or whatever. I don't know. I mean, I don't use mail, so that maybe that's part of my problem, but. You know,
I bet you could use it even though from Thunderbird or any of the other mail, you could probably drag stuff across.
I wouldn't guarantee that at all. No? Okay. No, in fact, I would assume that I couldn't. Well, because it's, you know, it's using hyperlinks in Apple's thing. Yeah, I can't drag a message. Well, let's see what happens. Well, that's interesting. So, okay, I dragged a message into a note and I get a link to imap-message:// and what happens if I click that link? Does it bring me?
Don't do it.
There is no application set to open the URL imap:// Yeah.
Okay. But I bet you could set Thunderbird.
Well, yeah. We'll do this in real time. I can't set Thunderbird to open that. There is nothing, not even the mail app in my, the applications folder can be chosen to do this.
Is there not something you can check to say all apps, not just recommended?
Oh, you're right. Okay. All applications. Let's do this. Thank you, Pete. Look at this real time,
real time troubleshooting.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Where is Thunderbird here? Probably TH.
Yeah.
But do I run? I run the Thunderbird beta on this computer. Okay, great. All right. So I say open, and it did open a blank window on Thunderbird. I click it. Oh, this is amazing. I clicked it again, and it's yelling at me again that it has no application set to open this.
Okay. Well, we tried.
Yeah, we sure did, didn't we? It's not known if this application can open these things. I got that. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so it's a no-go with, at least with, not with Thunderbird this way. So, yeah.
Doesn't work with Spark either, or the new Spark desktop email thing.
Yep.
I've been such a Spark fan for so long, and this new, I love the developers, I love the company, but this new desktop app that they put together, it's just non-standard. They went and did their own thing. It's beautiful. I mean, it looks beautiful. The designers did a great job, but it is like all weird non-native. I don't know what they've done.
Oh,
functionality kind of stuff. You know, they like wrote their own things, and I don't like the new version of the app, the desktop app especially.
Interesting. I need to mess around with mail in the new macOS 15 and see if it's been made more functional or more extensible or something that would allow me to go back to it. Thunderbird's been fine though. Like I really, other than these kinds of things. And the big one for me is that Thunderbird does not, work with AppleScript. And you might think, well, how many people use AppleScript with mail? Have you ever taken an attachment and dragged it onto the mail icon and have it open a new mail message with that attachment as part of the message? Guess what? That's AppleScript that makes that happen. And with Thunderbird not supporting AppleScript, I can't do that. So there are things. And I also, like when you click a link to, you know, send this as an email or something. Some of that leverages AppleScript in mail, and so Thunderbird doesn't do that either. There's a few things where it's like, oh yeah, I have to kind of, you know, do a little workaround. Yoink is great for that. So, mm-hmm. you know, if actually by this point, by the time this episode is released, or right about this time, we'll do our drawing for the winners of the five licenses of Yoink from our August giveaway, and we will be able to announce our September giveaway. But at the time we're recording this, I don't have the details yet. But you can always go to MattGeekab.com/giveaway, and you'll see what it is. I just can't announce it yet because it's not all put together. But that's okay. It's close. Yep.
Yeah, this goes back to this whole conversation goes back to what I brought up last week, where in my old age, I've started to take the path of least resistance, and I'm like coming back into the Apple fold because life just gets a lot easier that way, even though there's hardships, obviously, like there's advanced things you miss out on or little quirks, but more and more just easy. You get good features like this tip.
Yep. Yeah. For me, it's a trade off, right? Because doing like I can't manage my email the way I would want to anymore with Apple Mail because I have all of my stuff coming into one mail account, and I need to be able to have different things happen when I reply from different addresses, different signatures, that sort of thing. And Apple Mail just doesn't allow for that. So it's yeah. I also am looking for the path of least resistance. It's just that my version of that path and your version of that path are different.
Yeah.
It's all it is. Yeah, exactly. Yep. All right. Let's see. I want to talk about our sponsor for this week, and that is Coda. Have you ever felt like managing a team is like trying to herd invisible cats while blindfolded? I've been there too. And that's why with one of my other teams, I use Coda, our sponsor. It has been a lifesaver. Coda is like the ultimate Swiss Army knife for productivity, bringing together documents, spreadsheets, and apps into one magical platform. No more jumping between tabs and tools. Coda keeps everything in one place and makes it a breeze to collaborate. With Coda, you can manage your planning cycles in one spot, set and measure all those OKRs with full visibility, and instantly, collaborate on documents, roadmaps, and more. And when you need a little creative spark, Coda's gallery has hundreds of templates to get you started. It's like finding a treasure chest full of productivity gold, minus the skeletons. I've used Coda to keep my other team perfectly aligned, and it's been fantastic. So don't get caught trying to juggle digital chaos. Coda empowers your startup to strategize, plan, and track goals effectively. Take advantage of this limited time offer just for startups. Go to coda.io/MGG today and get 6 months free of the team plan. That's coda.io/MGG to get started for free and get 6 free months of the team plan. coda.io/MGG. And our thanks to Coda for sponsoring this episode. You want to take us to the next thing here, Adam? The next question here, Adam?
Yeah, Tony has a question for us. He says, how do I make it so that one focus mode doesn't override the other? For example, I work at a church and I have work set to automatically focus based on smart activation. So when I drive to the church slash work during the week, all is fine. But during the actual church services, I have a do not disturb set based on time. Sunday at 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Wednesday at 7 p.m. You would think that it would know the one I want, but I guess it seems to me that my church slash work address, it seems to me at my church work address, and I'm messing this up now. Basically, it's turning on when he doesn't want it to turn on, right? He wants it to do the church work thing with the work focus, and then on the weekends he wants, or when it's service time, he wants that. So is there any way to prioritize focus modes?
And it turns out, as far as I've been able to find out, there is not. Apparently, when the focus modes conflict, The most recently activated one will take precedence. And since you're in a geolocation that's activated, it's going to override the time-based one. So I'm wondering aloud here, and maybe this is kind of a geek challenge if there's a way to do it differently. I'm wondering if he can schedule his work mode to deactivate. Now, it's a geolocation to start it, but then to deactivate it on certain days, say 5 minutes before service is supposed to start, and then the scheduled one, do not disturb, should kick on as scheduled. So, Tony, I want you to write to me and tell me how smart I am.
As you were talking about that, I was like implementing it here, Pete. Yeah. And you can set, when you go into your focus mode and set a schedule, you can set multiple schedules. And so I wonder if, and this is where I don't know if it's an and set of things or an or set.
Or.
Right. But you can set location and time. But again, I don't know if it's location and time or if it's location or time, but I could set multiple things. Oh. That the instructions say have this focus turn on automatically at a set time, location, or while using a certain app. So my guess is that these are that these are or conditions.
Or conditions.
So you can't say only turn it on when I'm at work during these hours.
It's this time.
Yeah.
So, and I'm wondering if you have a location one, can you have it turn off? Or does it come back and go, oh, no, I'm in this location and I'm going to turn back on? So,
well, what if, though, we go back to what seems to be a theme of this episode and we create an automation that says, because automations can be set for times and it only if in a certain location, and then run, can we, let's say a time of day at 8 a.m., I'm going to say 8:45 a.m. on weekdays. What am I going to do? I'm going to run a shortcut, and I can have the shortcut be turn on my podcasting focus. So that would, so you'd create a shortcut that turned on the focus, just that's all the shortcut does. Then you'd go into that automations tab in shortcuts and tell it when these conditions are true, run the shortcut that turns on my focus. And you would also go into your focus mode and turn off any automatic focus things. And so you would be using shortcuts automations to trigger a shortcut to trigger a focus mode. And I think that might do it.
I'm feeling pretty triggered with that, Dave.
Yeah.
I mean, in theory, right, you should be, you could almost set it up as one thing with the conditionals if you want to get really crazy.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. If I'm in this location and it's not
this day of the week and it's not these times, then do that. Otherwise, do the other thing.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Heck yeah. I think that would work most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, so forget the built-in focus mode thing. Just write your location-based shortcut to trigger it all conditionally.
Yeah. Yeah. Join us in our Discord. If you have questions about doing this, we're happy to help. MacGeekUp.com/Discord. would be the place to go. But yeah, this is doable.
I like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Apple should add, though, you know, to that to your earlier point,
should like, be an and or.
You should be able to choose. Yeah. Like when you're setting those up, they should, that would solve this problem without having to do some sort of priority thing, because priority might change too. So like, you know, I think the ability to set up focus modes with and conditions or conditions would be great.
Yeah, I agree. I like it. Yeah, I love it. This is a very real time episode here. So, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. All right, what else can we do in real time here? You want to take us to the next one, Pete?
I think if we go to Drewski, we'll see if we can take him off the edge of insanity, because he writes in and says, I'm being driven to the edge of insanity by the Messages app. iPhone SE 3 running 17.3.1 and an M1 MacBook Pro 13.6.3. And if you do write to us at feedback@macgeekgab.com, it's always helpful to tell us which OS you're using or iOS.
Did you say feedback@macgeekgab.com? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he said feedback@macgeekgab.com, Dave.
Yeah. Okay. And that's where Drewski wrote to us. And he continues with, it is so inconsistent and unpredictable when sending photo or video attachments, but only to Android phones. I have adjusted the settings every possible way I can think of countless times, and I still cannot depend on the attachment being sent. This is regardless of Wi-Fi or cellular signal. Sometimes the attachment sends without issue. Sometimes there is a slow-moving green progress bar, which almost always results in a not-delivered error. Sometimes the recipient reports a successful send, although the app reports not delivered. And sometimes one attachment goes successfully, and a moment later, another does not. I beg you, please help me correct this and stop my descent into lunacy. On the other hand, I do have a whole new application for Ozzy's Diary of a Madman. So there's that.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Messages of a Madman, the 2024 right. remake. Yeah. So usually the slow-moving, inconsistent green bar or even blue bar, if you're sending an iMessage, combined with the not delivered reports, the times where I have seen these, it's because service is bad or intermittent or whatever. Like when we were in your plane, Pete, you know, and I would send a text message, you know, we occasionally that with signal would sort of, you know, catch us depending on our altitude and how close we were to a tower. And we get some messages in and be like, oh, I want to send a text out. And, you know, some and I, a lot of those would say not delivered. And then later in the day, I would get a response from, you know, my family that would be like, oh, that's pretty cool or whatever. And it's like, oh, it was delivered. Okay. So when
it would pop up on my iPad.
Right. So not delivered. I would see it. Yeah. If we were in a group text together, it was like, well, it definitely was delivered. It's right there. Yep. That's right. You're right. Yeah, exactly. So those things, anytime I've seen them, it's related to inconsistent or weak service. We know, based on what Drewski said, that that his phone has been in great service, and still he's seeing this issue. Assuming that going with that information as it, you know, a piece of truth here. One other thing I would check is enable Wi-Fi calling so that when you're on Wi-Fi, it can send this stuff over the Wi-Fi to SMS gateway, which does exist, and that can work. But assuming neither of those is the case, it's still telling me that there might be something about the service on this device. And with that, I would go into settings, general reset, and reset network settings. I've seen that fix weird cellular mobile data problems in the past, and it's the first place I would go. This will, though, delete all of your VPN settings, and it might delete some or more than some of your saved Wi-Fi passwords. So bear that in mind as you do this. Some people have been able to successfully preserve their Wi-Fi passwords by disabling iCloud keychain syncing before doing this reset network settings, do all the resets, make sure your phone's working, then re-enable iCloud keychain syncing, and it will pull back down all of your saved Wi-Fi passwords. If you don't disable Wi-Fi syncing and it does wipe your passwords, it will push the deletions of those back up to iCloud and you lose them on all of your devices, potentially. That part of things inconsistent, but if you turn off iCloud keychain before you do this, that usually will save you from that. So, but that's what I would do next, because it seems like a cellular data issue or a cellular connection issue, I should say, because SMS is not data. I mean, it is.
But yep.
Yeah.
RCS will save us all, right?
You know, here's an interesting thing. I've been running the 18.1 betas on my daily driver iPhone, and by and large, it's been working fine. The one that just came out on Wednesday, the 28th, solves the one sort of pesky issue that I was having, which was that when my phone was in low power mode, it took a really long time to wake up. It was sluggish to wake up, which in a sense checks out, right? You know, if it's going to be in low power mode, it's not checking the digitizer all the time, so it doesn't, you know, wake up. But it was far different than, you know, an iOS 17 experience. I believe that has been fixed or changed now. But otherwise, it's been really reliable. I am on Mint Mobile, which as of the moment we're recording this, which is Thursday the 29th, has not yet enabled RCS on their network. However, which means I'm still using SMS. I have several text groups that are SMS text or SMS slash MMS text groups with, like, you know, friends and bandmates and things like that. Right. iOS 18 and 18.1 have made those groups, even without RCS, so much better. If someone reacts to a message, it comes through as a reaction, just like it would in an iMessage chat. You don't, it previous with iOS 17, I would get like a new text message that says, you know, Tom reacted with a heart to quote, and then they'll quote the message. So it's filtering those properly now. If someone does a reply, the replies actually are threaded properly. So it's the messages app is smarter even with SMS, which is really nice to see because, you know, what, a week from the day this episode's released, we have an Apple announcement. And so, you know, I would assume that iOS release will be a week after that. I don't know if Mint Mobile will have their act together with RCS yet or not. So it stands to reason there may be folks who, when 18 comes out, upgrade and still don't have RCS support because it doesn't exist. But hopefully.
Talking to you, Ryan. Get your act together.
That's right. Listen up, buddy. Yeah. Quit making those funny movies and flip that RCS switch, will you?
I have one other thought on that, that it may be a side case. And when I have experienced problems with it going through at times, it has been because I have had my VPN on. So when I've turned off VPN, it goes through. It's like, oh, all right. And I don't know why that, you know, it shouldn't be the case, right? It should just send it on a different route, but it doesn't always. And frequently on my MacBook Pro, when I send an email and it bounces back, I go, my mail server does not like when I'm using a VPN.
Interesting. So. Yeah. No, it's a good point. Thinking about what, you know, I said reset network settings, but thinking about the things that you might have put in the way of, you know, your connections. SMS shouldn't be impacted by a VPN unless you're on a Wi-Fi to SMS gateway, in which case it could be. So, turn it off. See what happens.
Yeah. I mean, VPN, like, we have to use the VPN at work, and I mean, it doesn't impact me that much, but I mean, it does throttle my connection for sure. Like, you know, I'm getting less bandwidth, but it should be plenty for something like an SMS, or, you know, like, I wouldn't think that would impact. But the other thing that I wanted to mention is, like, a possible workaround. I mean, you could just use a service like Box or even iCloud sharing and just, like, send the link to the file, you know, to the attachment on another service. And I would imagine that would just get through, you know?
Yeah. And you could use WhatsApp. You could use, you know, Telegram. You could, you know, any of the all digital, all the time messaging platforms would theoretically work unless there's some more widespread issue. So, yep.
Yeah. But I mean, like, most of those, you can go into the Finder, you can go into the app and then just go right to messages, right? Click the share button for the file and go to messages, and it'll send the link rather than trying to attach it to an SMS.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair. Fair.
Yeah.
All right. James has a question. And James,
it disappeared from the note.
Only had, well, I don't think it disappeared from the note. I think it was never put into the note to begin with, Pilot Pete.
Well,
but I remember James's question, and it was addressed to you, Pete. The question is, can you explain to me how passkeys work, and are they going to make us more secure with things? You know, now I see websites that have passkeys and passwords. Does the fact that I'm using a passkey make me more secure? What's the deal? Pete, you're our only hope. Help.
Yeah, there you go. Well, if I'm your only hope, you probably should just hit stop now and get out of your car, folks. Walk away. Walk away now.
Run quickly. That's right.
Yeah, don't walk, run.
Driven from insanity in real time.
That's right. The second part of the question was about passwords, and if we're still using passwords, are we more vulnerable? And the simple answer is yes. As long as you're using a password, even if it's in parallel with a pass key, if the website is allowing that, then if you're just using a password, yes, if your password gets lifted by somebody else and they can get in. So yes, you're more vulnerable. So obviously the hope is to eventually get to all pass keys, because that technology is pretty cool. It's just asymmetric crypto key. Yeah. Or one of those that Adam's holding up as a little like a YubiKey type
YubiKeys
device. That
you plug
in. Yeah. But it's an asymmetric crypto key. So when you set one up with, for instance, BestBuy.com, you're essentially creating an asymmetric key. Best Buy stores your public key on their server. And when you go to log in, it queries your keychain and your private key answers and says, yeah, here I am. And you're not transmitting out a password, as it were. You're just unlocking that key. And it says, oh, okay, yeah, you're you. And you log in and you activate that pass key, your private key, by usually a fingerprint or a face ID or something along those lines. So even if, and I put in there, because he asked if someone tried to do like phishing or something like that, that's fine. As long as they've got your public key, your private key is going to answer, but they're not getting a password from you. So they can't grab your private key and then go log in at another site with you. So, or with your private key, because they don't have your private key. So that's what makes it more secure. And it's pretty, pretty cool technology. And it's been around for just a couple decades or so. But
do you have stuff to add to that, Adam?
No, just, I mean, the big part of this is, you know, the private key is unlocked by something you have, something physical, be it your fingerprint or your face ID in a lot of cases. I don't know if this is always 100% the case, but like these little YubiKeys, right? It has to be plugged in. This one's Lightning and USB-C on one side. This one's a USB-A one. So those are from my work. I have to use them to log into things. Although it's become more convenient now that passkeys are better supported, I can actually use Touch ID on my keyboard. And I actually had my IT department order me a new keyboard with the Touch ID on it, because I use my laptop and clamshell. Or, you know, even other services now I can tie into that. What was I doing? The Synology. I just set up my Synology with passkey rather than other authentication. So not only is it more secure, but it's also just more convenient, in my opinion, especially with our Macs and iOS devices, which have biometric things that support passkeys built in now. So like Touch ID, Face ID works great.
Yeah. The frustrating part is like websites that make me log in with a password and then use my passkey. And it's like, okay, like I love the security. That's great. But this first step is just unnecessary. Like we don't need it, but it using the passkey as the second factor, right, is better than using, you know, SMS as the second factor, for example, right? Because of the inherent security, and when people say, when Pete says asymmetric key, it just means it's a two-part key, and you can hand out the public key all day long, and then without your private key, you can't. No one can authenticate. So, yeah.
Yeah. Not even you.
Yeah, it works well. I have it set up on my Apple account. And that works fine. It, you know, I get to go log in and it's all good. So, yep. And I don't have to type my password. I just use my pass key and it lets me in. As long as my Mac's unlocked, my pass key's unlocked, and I'm in, which is cool.
So Gordon has something interesting to talk to us about, and it's not directly a question, but it brought up questions in my mind. So Gordon says, recently my mom's WordPress site, which she uses for community events, stopped receiving emails from her contact form and the automated emails informing her that the nightly backups were successful. After some research, I discovered that the emails were sent using WordPress's default mail method. And often get flagged as spam. So it's just going through the regular PHP mailer and WordPress. This is due to lack of authentication information, leading to emails being marked as spam and not being delivered. So there's all this new deliverability technology that can validate emails. And if it's just going through your standard server and no domain, those can get blocked and flagged as spam. So he says, as a quick fix for my mom's website, I followed the common recommendation of using WP Mail SMTP plugin and basically sending it through a known service like SendLayer, you know, and they have these additional deliverability things built into them. He said that solved the problem, but it came with a downside of I ended up paying $60 a year for email, which isn't ideal for a site that generates no income. Then I remembered that if you subscribe to iCloud Plus, you can set up a custom email domain. I decided to try the solution for a couple of my other hobby sites as I don't want to pay for transactional email services for these sites. With iCloud Plus, you can set up a custom email domain that's associated with a domain name you own. I tested this for one of my hobby sites by setting up custom email domain on iCloud.com and then entering the necessary information into the WP Mail SMTP plugin on my WordPress website. Success. I started receiving my contact form and administrative emails. And the best part is I was able to do this with a service I already pay for without needing an additional third-party transactional email service. So if you run a business and rely on websites to generate income, a transactional email service may be worth the investment. However, if you have a hobby site and you're looking for an email solution, iCloud Plus custom email domains might be the answer you're looking for.
Huh.
So, yeah, I think this is a great idea. And what I responded back was, you know, I've been wanting to play with this. I haven't really found a use case. So I think, one, thank you. I think this is a really good use case for people. But then the questions I have is, do you guys know, I don't know if either of you have set up custom email domains. Is it just one domain per iCloud account, or can you do this with multiple domains? Like, I haven't played around with it.
Oh, no. So, well, we have a family account, and I don't have a custom iCloud. I don't have a custom domain on my iCloud mail. I could. I just haven't chosen to implement that. But, like, my wife has one that she uses for her mail. My daughter has her own custom domain for her mail. My son has a custom domain for his mail. But I think we could cross-pollinate that. Like, I think it's on our family account. So I think there are ways of doing multiple domains. At least, certainly with a family account. I don't know about individual accounts, but that's a good question. Yeah.
And then, so then does, when email comes in, Is it the kind of thing where, like, every email address at that domain just goes to your, like, iCloud, or goes to that one domain?
It goes to your iCloud. Yeah, email comes into your iCloud account. Yes. Yes. Your iCloud email is the recipient of that
all
email.
Of it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's not like you can have additional email accounts that are going to different people. It's all going to funnel into your one iCloud account. So it's like, that is you. Okay.
That is you. Correct. And when you go to send email from the iCloud web interface, you get to pick the address from which you are sending
domain.
It.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's interesting because earlier this episode, I was lamenting the fact that you can't have different signatures for different outbound addresses all tied to the same account. And now here we are talking about how Apple's own functionality has this in it, but still doesn't allow for separate signatures. So maybe there's hope. Maybe they will actually adopt this. Rod L in the chat has another answer for this. And it is a service called SMTP to go. I use this with one of our domains. It is for sending email only. And there is a free plan that lets you send 1,000 emails a month with a 200 email per day limit. So for exactly what Gordon's talking about here, this could be used for free and almost certainly would suffice. So you could save your $60 a year with SMTP to go. And then of course, as you send more emails, well, then, you know, the price they do have, it's a freemium service, right? So if you need more than 1,000 emails a month, then you get 10,000 emails a month for $10, which is more than your $60 a year. But if you're doing less than 1,000 a month, this might be your answer too. So thank you for that, Rod. Yeah.
That's SMTP, the number 2, go.
Thank you, Pete.
SMTP to go.
Yeah. Yep. Link in the show notes. Full show. Where are we here on time? Yeah, okay. Great. Tony says, I use NextDNS mainly to block ads, but I guess I like the security features and they help too. However, there are some sites and apps that just won't load with the NextDNS filters in place. I could go in and look at the logs, see what's being blocked, and start whitelisting domains so that doesn't happen in the future. But most of the time, I just want a simple back to no DNS filter so I can load whatever. He says the McDonald's app is one of them, and then turn it back on when I'm finished. In shortcuts, there is an option to turn on and off a VPN. But there is no way to turn off a network's filters and proxies. Do you all know of a way that is quicker than going to settings, then general, then VPN and device management, then restrictions and proxies, then the next DNS profile and change it to automatic, then go back to what I need to do, then go back and through those steps and turn it all on again? If there's a way to do this via shortcuts, I could link the tap the back of the phone 2 to 3 times to run a shortcut, do whatever the filter's blocking, and then tap it again. So that would be really fun. But I don't know how to do it. Pete, you might have an answer.
Yeah, neither do I. Sorry.
Okay, moving on.
Sorry, Tony. Okay. Tony, I have a partial answer. And again, the proxies part starts getting tough, but I have a partial solution to this, and I put it in MGG tips in Discord, and I just put it in MGG live chat. It's a quick way to get into your VPN profiles, turn them on and off. It doesn't deal with the next DNS profile, but at least I don't think it does. But the shortcut I use is open the shortcuts app and tap the little plus icon, create a new shortcut, search for open URLs, and add that to the shortcut. And in the URL field, enter /root=VPN. And the shortcut will directly open your VPN profiles on your iOS device.
Oh, so it gets you like one tap away from...
Yeah, one tap away from getting into... So you don't have to go into settings and search for it and all that. And then just place your shortcut somewhere on your home screen or your dock or whatever, you know, wherever you like. So it's a start.
Yeah.
Someone take us further down that path that has more G2 than me on that subject.
I wonder if one of the, you know, there's those shortcuts extensions that third party developers have put together. I wonder if one of those has anything more. I mean, probably not. There are certain limitations, but these people have gotten really creative. So I don't know. Maybe so. Maybe not. Where are we here? What are we, what are we doing here?
We're going to go to Richard next with his question.
No, let's save that. Let's do some cool stuff found. Cause there's been some cool things found. Yep. All right. I'll start with Joe's. If either one of you wants to grab some of these other ones, that'd be great. But if not, then we'll just talk them through. Joe sent in a thing. He says, it turns out I'm not the only one having a hard time understanding why Apple added a low power mode to the Mac, but no easy way to toggle it. It really should be a toggle in Control Center. However, I found a cool utility called Cooldown to toggle the Mac's low power mode. He does acknowledge that the The Al Dente app also has a toggle, but it does not show you its status at a glance. And cooldown sits in your menu bar, and you get to see and toggle low power mode on your Mac in the menu bar, which I would have really liked to have when we were trying to do recordings from from CES, Pete. And I realized that low power mode was killing my ability to use StreamYard. So I like it. Yeah. Cool down. So there you go. Thanks for sending that in. That's a good one, Joe. Excellent.
Hey, Jim has one.
Yep.
I was trying to find this in the, I don't know why I can't find this in the notes, but I know what he was talking about because I read this email. So back on 1051, I believe it was.
Yeah.
We were talking about ways to do Bluetooth audio, actually capture audio from your AirPods Pro when you're shooting a video, and you can't do it in the native app in camera app. And so we had recommended and said you might try, you know, a third party app, and Filmic Pro was one that I've used in the past and like, and it is now a subscription model and it's a little more expensive. So Jim wrote in and said, hey, check out Black Magic Camera from Black Magic. They have a great app that he says is even more full featured than Filmic Pro, and added bonus, it's free.
Yeah.
Love it.
I got actually something more to add to that. I saw this from Jim, who happens to also listen to my other show. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate that. He said it's free. And I went, okay. And I downloaded it. And man, it popped right up with like 7-day free trial, then $4.99 a week, or $19.99 a year, or a $40 one-time purchase. And I went, well, not doing it right now. But unlike most of the time when I see something like that, I didn't delete the app. I just didn't. And I went, I wonder if I can at least look at it without getting the subscription. And I went back in and I opened it up and there was no screen. And I thought, wow, did I accidentally take the 7-day? And I went and checked my subscriptions. I did not. And it apparently is working.
Okay.
I don't know. But so color me confused. But I'm just saying, when it came up and said, hey, this is going to cost you. And then it didn't. So don't be.
Interesting. I'm not seeing anything about in-app purchases on the page for Black. We're talking about Black Magic Camera, Pete?
Black Magic Camera, yes. Yeah.
From Black Magic Design.
From Black Magic Design. Interesting.
And when I downloaded it and I opened it up and it was like, hey, subscription and money. And okay, well, I'm not going to do it right now. And then I went back to it a few minutes later to look at something. And it wasn't asking for, and I thought, well, maybe I accidentally subscribed.
Are you sure you didn't accidentally open Filmic Pro?
Because everything you just described is Filmic.
Well, and I'll even comment. So I had originally downloaded Filmic when it was pre its new model. And just a tip for anybody who may have done the same thing, because I hadn't opened it in a while. So I opened it when this tip came in. And sure enough, it popped up, you know, all this subscription stuff and blah, 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 blah. But it also mentioned that if you had the older version, you could just continue to use version 6 versus version 7. So I just had to find the little tiny, you know, like close, I don't want anything. And it dropped me right back into the original app, version 6 app that I had.
I think you launched Filmic, yeah. Pete. This is literally the same.
Filmic.
This is literally the same discussion we had about pricing last week, though. And you did download Filmic, right? You told me.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure that you had it and you were like, oh, it's going to be super expensive. And it was like, well, it's not as expensive. It's $4.99 for a week. Like unless this is solo deja vu, which is totally possible, but I think it might be, what did you call it before? I'm not going to say it. Yeah. Because, I'm not.
Déjà ma toi. There it is. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, thanks, Pete. Because I just downloaded Black Magic Camera, and it's 100% free. So it must have been a different app. It had to have been.
Well, I thought I did it from the App Store when it said, hey, download open. But I could be wrong. I'm just, it was bizarre.
That is.
That's why I put the note in Cool Stuff Found. I went, don't be fooled by it, folks. Go back to it.
Yeah, I don't think. So. I think.
All right.
Yeah, I don't think there's that.
I self-inflicted a fooling on myself.
Well, that we do that all the time, for sure. Yeah. We have had another cool stuff found floating around about Blackmagic Camera, and that is that because as of earlier this month, a new version of this adds multi iPhone control and an iPad version. Right. So.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. So you can, and it will pull in all this data. And then, of course, it's in a format that can be used with DaVinci Resolve for the Mac, which is Blackmagic's video editing software. And if you haven't, and that's probably the bonus cool stuff found here is DaVinci Resolve. DaVinci Resolve is amazing. It is a professional video editing suite that is available for free. And really, that one I should make clear, there is a freemium option there. I've never run into anything on it doing the things that I do that would even make me think, oh, I can't do that because I haven't paid the, whatever it is, $300 or $400 for the package. And it's built for this, right? It's built for solo folks, hobbyists, students to learn the package, to use it, to really become fluent in it. And then if you wind up doing this professionally, there are some features that you might want for that really only apply to pros, and that's what you would pay for. But if you're doing it professionally, the $300 or $400, and I keep saying $300 or $400 because I can't remember how much DaVinci Resolve is, but it's not any more than that. But yeah, no, DaVinci Resolve is awesome. And it's now up to version 19, $295. So it's actually less than I was saying, slightly. DaVinci Resolve Studio is the pro version. You can look at the differences, but it's what I use for any video editing that I have to do. And it's way, way more powerful than anything I've ever touched. So filming with Blackmagic Camera might well be a good way to, you know, get your content in a way that it's going to have all the metadata in all the ways that that DaVinci Resolve would need. And with the multicam stuff, this starts getting really interesting. So, yeah.
Who needs a $50,000 studio camera?
Get a few iPhones.
Blackmagic Camera 2.0. And
yep.
Yeah.
You're good to go.
Boom.
Yeah.
Done.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, no, so. You would probably use DaVinci Resolve far more than I would, Pete. Just knowing the kind of stuff you like to do, and you'd make way better use of it than me. So, yep.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna.
And it turns out it's all
absolutely
free.
Absolutely.
Yep.
My favorite price as an airline captain. Just saying. All right. Hey, well, Steven writes in with another cool stuff found. Light shot screenshot for easy screenshots. He says, hello, gentlemen. Losing that term loosely, I think he is. He says, I was listening to episode 1051 where you discussed applications that created screenshots on a Mac. I wanted to provide my 2 cents worth just for fun. I'm not a power user, so instead of memorizing keyboard combinations, I downloaded an application called Lightshot Screenshot years ago, and it continues to work for me. My present machine is an M2 MacBook Air 13-inch. It was free when I downloaded it, and it remains in the App Store. As far as I can tell, it is still free. You launch the application, and you're given the crosshairs, which you use to draw the area that you want to capture as usual. You are then given the option to print, save, or copy. There are rudimentary markup tools as well. It does have a couple of buttons so that you can directly share to Twitter, Pinterest, and a couple of other places, but that's not my usual workflow. The app icon, which looks like a purple feather quill pen, sits in my dock for quick access. And as they say, it just works. So thank you for your time and efforts. Great show. Best regards, Steven. Thank you, Steven.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're not someone whose fingers remember commands, you know, our brains all work differently. Put it in the dock, click it. There you go.
Right.
Good to go. I like that. That's pretty good. All right, one last cool stuff found before I have to go meet my new doctor. I swear I'm going to find it somewhere here. Here it is. I found it. Great. Rob.
The doctor or the cool stuff found?
cool stuff found first.
There you go.
Yeah. Rob says, back in episode 1047, you were talking about using a device to monitor the temperature inside your refrigerator or freezer. And I believe you mentioned a Bluetooth device for that, and that you had to be very close to it sometimes to read it, to read the temperature from it, because, of course, it's like a Faraday cage of sorts. I wanted to let you know, Rob says, that I have had great success using a different device and protocol. You may have heard of LoRa, L-O-R-A. Instead of using the 2.4 gigahertz range of Bluetooth, LoRa uses 900 megahertz. Lower frequency generally equates to better signal penetration propagation. True. I have employed several devices from Yolink, which leverage this LoRa technology, L-O-R-A. You first add their hub to your network via Ethernet, and then you can deploy a wide range of devices, and in this case, their temperature sensor. So, yeah, he says, I found this brand to be rock solid. The devices just work, and with zero hassle. I'm even using one to notify me when the mail is delivered to my mailbox at quite a distance from my house, well beyond the, you know, 30 to 35 feet I would expect with Bluetooth. I just thought I would share this and hope that it helps someone else who has a similar need. It recently literally saved my bacon, notifying me that the freezer in the garage had given up the ghost and allowed us to quickly respond. I put one of these in my Amazon cart as soon as it came in, because yesterday I went to get something out of the freezer in our garage and noticed that the door, there was something inside that was keeping the door from being closed, and things were starting to thaw, and that's bad and dangerous. So yeah, it's $39 to buy the wireless temp sensor with the hub. I think without the hub, it's $22 or something. So I was looking to see if like the hub is matching some other hub that I already have, but I don't think it is. I don't think I have any LoRa hubs here. It says, don't try this with Wi-Fi. Our unique LoRa-based sensors are different from Wi-Fi, Zigbee, Z-Wave, and most other wireless smart sensors. So, yeah, okay. Yep. So I need the
That's
hub.
Cool.
So I'll pay the $40. Well, actually, there's a 10% coupon, so I'll pay the $36. Fun stuff. Go ahead.
I was just going to wonder, is that a standard? And also, Zoe says, always save the bacon, which I agree with.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And if the bacon first. If the bacon starts to thaw, just cook it and eat it. That's the thing. Yeah. 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 This is interesting. Yeah. I feel like I'm buying a hub that I don't need because I have so many other things like that. But maybe I just bite the bullet and just do it. So
yeah, I probably need this. We had the same thing. My daughter accidentally went out and get something from the freezer. Same thing. Didn't shut. And it was in the garage. And obviously we didn't know it came out. And I know we lost some steaks, which I was not happy about.
But. Yep. That's how, it
the
works.
The price of this thing is cheaper than the lost food alone.
That's fair. That
not
is
to mention
fair.
Your electric bill, trying to freeze the entire garage.
Yeah.
It just isn't going to work.
It's not as efficient as you would think. Yeah. And I'm fight it out.
Right. Doctor time.
It's doctor time. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thanks for hanging out with us, folks. Thank you for sending in all your tips and your questions. Thank you for just simply listening. It's so amazing that we continue to get to do this, and we're very, very fortunate. Thanks to our friends at CashFly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Check out Pete's other show, So There I Was. Check out my other two shows, Business Brain and Git Gab. We link to all that stuff in the show notes. We link to our socials in the show notes if you want to find us there. And check out our merch store, MacGeekGab.com/merch. Maybe you need to get a MacGeekGab t-shirt so that you don't forget the three magic words, which None of us are wearing any of the shirts today, so I don't remember. Mm. Pete, do you remember what the words are?
Well, I do. And for my pilot friends, I'll say it like this. Stay off the radar. But for everyone else, don't get caught.
Me.
Oh, that's great.
Later.